Welcome back to Podcast Recovery, everyone. We are your hosts, David O.
And Eric V.
Today we are joined by our very lovely guest, Kim. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. Okay. I'm rolling one contact right now. My eyes are half fucked right now, but it's okay. Where are you originally from, Kim?
I am originally from Southern California, born and raised.
Nice.
Yeah. Cool.
Second out-of-stater? Third. Herb, Kelsey, Kim?
Emily, technically.
Emily.
And Donnie, technically. Yeah. And
fuck all. Yeah. Anyway, when were you first introduced to recovery?
In 2011, mm-hmm. around March of 2011.
That was your first introduction?
Yes.
Nice. And how much clean time do you have?
A little over, well, more like 7.5 at this point. More than 7.5 years.
That's crazy.
That's awesome. All right. Well, without further ado, we're going to turn it over to you to share your story with us.
Okay. So I guess I'll just start at the beginning.
Yeah. That's a good place to start.
Yeah.
No, do a Tarantino. Start at the end. Work backwards.
Yes. So...
We should do that.
Yeah.
Like sure. I said, I'm from California, born and raised. Mm-hmm. My parents had me when they were very young, like 18, 19 years old. Mm-hmm. They split up shortly after having me. I was probably only maybe 6 months old. Mm-hmm. So they split custody. It was like 6 months with one, 6 months with the other. Mm-hmm. My dad lived in California and my mom lived in Missouri. So it was very like back and forth.
Yeah, that's a big change.
Yes. And it went on like that until probably about I was 5 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when I was staying with my dad, it was really I was staying with my grandparents.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he wasn't taking care of me. My grandparents were. And they were very well off, you know, very stable. But then when I would go to my mom's, there was a lot of drugs, mm-hmm. a lot of living in houses that were not great.
Was your mom in California or Missouri?
Missouri.
Okay.
Yes. So she was married to someone who was an addict.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was a lot of chaos that went along with that. And I got to experience that at a really young age. You know, being locked out of the house for hours at a time. You know, when my dad would pick me up from the airport to bring me back, you mm-hmm. know, they would tell me stories about how my clothes would be filthy and my shoes would just be soaked in pee.
Ugh.
You know, because I just wasn't being cared for.
Yeah.
But around the time I was five, something happened. I guess something happened in my mom's life and she couldn't take care of me anymore. She wasn't finished with her time of having me. And she just said, you know, you need to come get Kim. And my dad's like, okay, I'll come like next week. Or she's like, no, no.
Mm.
You know, and I didn't see her again until I was 13.
Mm.
And I spent a lot of time thinking that she was dead.
Yeah.
Because there was like years where I didn't hear from her.
Mm-hmm.
So lots of confusion and also knowing that I had other siblings that were still with her.
You know,
that right there made me feel unloved and unwanted very early on.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, my dad was living in Utah, was remarried, had like a stepson.
Mm-hmm.
So I came into that like fold and it didn't work out. It didn't last very long.
Yeah.
And then I got shipped off to my grandparents for them to raise me. And they were already raising my cousin who's 3 months older than me.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like going to this really nice private school and I was going to public school. And even from like that age, I could tell there was like a difference. We were being treated differently.
Yeah.
So again, that just fed this like feeling of like, what's wrong with me?
Mm-hmm.
And Tony was very, like, bright, very smart, genius, smart. So always being, like, compared to him
mm-hmm.
and never feeling like I was good enough.
Yeah.
And all of this, like I say, all of this is, like, kindergarten, first grade.
Yeah. Damn.
Yeah, so I was feeling that way really early. Other than that, like, we had a really good childhood. Our grandparents provided very well for us. Mm-hmm. You know, I lived in a really nice neighborhood in Chino Hills, and it was nice. And by the time I started first grade, they decided to put me in the in private school.
Okay.
So I started there, but again, it was always like Tony made the gold honor roll. I made the silver honor roll. It was just never enough.
Yep.
We moved when I was in fourth grade, and it was pretty far away from Chino Hills. It's like an hour, but it was a completely different world. We moved up to the mountains in a resort community where like movie stars keep their homes, vacation homes.
Nice.
And it was a community where like the kids had been together since kindergarten, you know, so they all knew each other.
Yeah.
It was a very small like community. So I was the outsider. Nobody wanted to be my friend. So I went from being in a school where I was like friends with everybody to having nobody. And that was really rough. And I finally made a friend. It was the next new girl that came in.
Nice.
It was like the only friend I had for a really long time. And things were okay. And then when I was 11, my world got completely turned upside down. My dad molested me. You know, he was like, I would spend time with him, you know, he was in my life, but not.
Yeah.
You know, at the same time. So he was like taking care of me while my grandma was on vacation or whatever. And it happened. And I immediately like went to my aunt and told her because it's like I knew that was wrong.
Yeah.
And she immediately took me to the police because like that's what you do.
Yeah.
And my dad was arrested. And by the time my grandma, you know, got back from vacation, she just came home to this.
Yeah.
And her immediate response was like, my son didn't do that. So like I immediately felt like everyone hated me. You know, nobody loved me. Feelings that were already there just were more validated.
Yeah.
By all this that was going on.
Did you even like, you probably even felt like alienated from like your own family?
Absolutely.
Oof.
Absolutely. Even my aunt who like had shown me support, like she just kind of had to like go along with what the rest of the family was doing.
Yeah.
So yeah, so I felt very alienated. I felt like I wasn't wanted. My dad, you know, we went through all the court proceedings and my dad was sent to prison and I was blamed for it. I ended up running away and, you know, I didn't know where I was going. I ended up like walking to the police station and they called a social worker. I got placed in like foster care, which wasn't really much of a better situation.
Yeah.
And then my aunt decided that she would like take me in.
Was she in California as well?
Yeah, she actually lived, you know, in the same little mountain community, like, you know, just a few miles from my grandma's house. But like they didn't want me to stay in foster care. That was not a good situation.
Yeah.
So she took me in and it was there that I started using. And the first time I used, it was by myself. Yeah, I was always a very like nosy kid. Like I would go through people's things. I would go in like my grandparents' room and just like, I wasn't even looking for anything. I would just rummage through their things.
Yeah.
So I was doing that. She was like out with her friends and I came across this purse and the only thing in it was a baggie. And in the baggie, there was weed and a pipe.
Nice.
You know, now I had an idea of what to do with it. I had smoked cigarettes. I used to steal my great grandma's like Marlboro Reds. And like go out in the woods and smoke. So, you know, I smoked that bowl by myself out on the deck. And for the first time, I felt like everything was okay. You know, I just, all the thoughts and the feelings kind of just melted away. And I was like, this is my solution. You know, to how I'm feeling. And from there, things just like progressed very quickly for me. I went from kind of like hanging out with that one friend who was like a good girl, you know, her, she was Mormon and I kind of like went from hanging out with her to seeking out the people, the bad kids.
Yeah.
And the bad kids were the older kids. And the older kids were doing more things than just weed.
Yeah.
So within weeks of doing, you know, weed for the first time, I was already doing pills.
Mm.
And then drinking more and more. I had started drinking before I even smoked weed because my family, they were kind of like, okay, like,
yeah,
you can have a sip of wine or, you know, around the holidays.
Yeah.
So that was probably my first experience ever, was drinking some wine. Or really my first experience with alcohol is those little chocolate candies.
She knew the question was coming.
Yes. I knew it was coming.
Yes.
But the chocolate candies. Yes, that have alcohol in them. But here's the thing.
As a little kid, it does.
I would bite the top off, drink the alcohol out, and not eat the candy.
But is that even doing anything to you?
I mean, when you're a little kid.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is there a placebo effect going on here?
Maybe.
There could be.
But for me, it's just like the act of
and drinking the inside, that is kind of like,
I didn't want the candy. I wanted what was on the inside, you know?
Nice.
That was the good stuff.
That's a first.
Yeah.
The chocolate liquors. Nice.
Yeah.
Do those still exist?
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, they okay. do. Yeah, so, you know, as things progressed, you know, people didn't know, like, my family didn't know how to deal with me. Mm-hmm. I was just, like, labeled the bad kid, you know, like,
yeah.
I was always running away. I would, like, run away and be gone for, like, 2 weeks at a time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because, like, once I was out with my friends and, like, I wasn't back in time, I was just like, fuck it. I'm already in trouble. Let's push this as far as it can go.
Yeah.
So I would just like hide in my friend's house, you know, avoiding their parents.
Yeah.
Until I was eventually caught. Mm. You know, all the while like using, you know, at their houses. And mm-hmm. looking back now, some of those houses I stayed at, their parents definitely had their own drug problems.
Yeah.
Because they were...
Yeah.
Yeah, they were some pretty nasty homes, and, like, the parents just didn't care what was going on. And
yep.
Well, you're hiding in the house, though. Like, you're actively avoiding them?
Yes, most of them. There was this one, like, boy that I was, like, seeing, and his mom... I just remember the house was always dark. There was just shit everywhere, dishes piled up, and she would just, like, let us go hang out in his room and smoke weed. And I thought that was the coolest thing. I was like, you have the coolest mom ever. Yeah. You know, so that was like the cycle I was in, like running away, getting picked up, going back, getting in trouble, you know, going to my grandma's house, going to my aunt's house, back and forth, back and forth. Like nobody knows what to do with me.
Yeah.
All the while, I'm still technically a ward of the state of California because I have a social worker.
Oh.
So California has custody of me.
Wow.
And they are actively looking for my mother.
Oh.
Yes. Mm. So they find her, and they ship me off to her.
Back to Missouri.
Yes.
Okay.
Back to Missouri to a very little shithole town. And it was a culture shock for me to go from, like, living in this really nice area in California to living in this tiny shithole town of Missouri in a trailer park with four other siblings at the time. I was the oldest.
Wow.
And my mom had just had another baby. But
what was the age gap there? Like 13, 14 years?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And then I had a brother who was, like, two years younger than me.
Mm-hmm.
And a sister that was, like, 2 years younger than him. It was, like, every 2 years she had a baby.
I mean, why not?
Yeah. So, living there, though, was very different because there weren't really rules.
Yeah.
You know, it was kind of like, do whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she was so busy, like, taking care of the baby or whatever. So, yeah, I would just, like, run around and use and just do whatever I wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was great. I actually hated the school there because I hated all the people there. It was one of those towns where it's, like, if you're not a cheerleader or a football player, then you're, like, one of the weird goth kids.
Yeah.
Were you a weird goth kid?
Yes.
Yes.
I was. I was.
I'm kind of sad that I answered that because, like, I know you so well. I was just like, yep, that's exactly who you are.
Yeah. So, you know, I started seeking out those type of, you know, people.
And when is this? Like, this is like the late 90s, right?
Yeah.
Late 90s, early 2000s. So this is like peak goth
era. Well, no, this was, early to 1998, 99?
Yeah, so that's like, that's prime goth time. So it's
like Marilyn Manson's like just hitting his stride in 98.
Right? Oh, yeah.
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 So I was in eighth grade, and I was hanging out with the high schoolers and not going to school, and my mom kind of just didn't care.
Yeah.
Or just didn't want to deal with me, like, not going to school. You know, she's like, whatever.
Yeah.
So in hanging out with the high schoolers, they were hanging out with the college kids. So, you know, I'm 13 years old, hanging out with college kids, like, thinking I'm really cool. And getting, you know, all the drugs that I want. And in that time, though, I am also sleeping with these people. And not thinking, like, there was anything wrong with that.
Yeah.
Looking back now, something's definitely wrong with that.
Yes.
So, you know, I was definitely being taken advantage of and not even knowing it. But I was just having a good time. And it was around that time that I overdosed for the first time. And I was, like, at this friend's house, and we were hanging out, and we were smoking. And I was like, you know what? This isn't enough. I want something else. Do you have something else? He's like, hold on. I'll be right back.
Ooh.
And he like comes in and a handful of pills.
Nice.
And I'm like, cool. And I take them. Don't ask what they are, where they came from. Yes.
Good God.
Why? Of pills.
Oh, man. God, woman.
Didn't we just talk about this in like the last recording where like it's just, guys, Arrowhead. Just be, know what you're getting yourself into.
No, I never cared. I never cared.
Goodness gracious.
Never.
Wow. Do you know what it was now?
Now I know because they pumped my stomach. So I remember the car ride, his mom was driving, we were in the back seat, and I was just like, kind of like just going in and out, vaguely aware of what was going on. And I don't know what his mom was thinking. She was just driving me back to my house. I don't know if she thought everything was fine or didn't care. But she drops me off. I guess I walked into my mom's house, and I don't remember anything after that. My mom says that I walked in, she asked me if I was okay, and I like fell backwards and was out. You know, so she calls the ambulance, they rush me to the hospital, pump my stomach. I remember coming to in the middle of that. Not a very fun experience. And then after that, I remember waking up like in the middle of the night in the hospital, like hooked up to a bunch of stuff. And then the next day they were like asking me all these questions. Like, did I want to kill myself? Was I trying to kill myself? Like, you know,
what were you on?
Once they pumped my stomach, they found out it was like Valium, his mom's heart rate medication, and Prozac.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Oh God.
Yeah. On top of like all the weed I had smoked. So
wait, the heart rate medication?
Yes.
Whoa.
Yeah. So
that's not even a high, is it?
But when you take all that Valium, and like, you know, what does that do to your system when you know, it's like, oh, let's adjust my heart rate now after like slowing it really, really down.
Yeah. If we have any doctors or medical professionals listening, please comment.
Apparently, basically, I guess I basically just like flatlined. I mean, I walked in my mom's house and just was like, boom, done.
Who knows?
You know,
goodness.
So after that, I remember they referred me to like some sort of counseling, and I think we went for an intake, and like my mom was like, no, we're not doing that.
Okay.
You know, well,
that's the thing.
I think she just wasn't like down for like therapy or any of that.
Yeah.
I don't know if like other things were suggested or recommended, but life just continued on, and I just continued doing the things that I was doing.
Prozac and heart meds.
Hell yeah.
Yes.
Good God.
Yeah. So after a year of living with my mom, things did not go well. I had gone back to visit my family in California and like realized like how good I had it there, mm-hmm. at least like materialistically wise. Yeah. You know, they like took me on a cruise while I was there and nice. Like showed me the good life that I could have.
Yeah.
So I went back to my mom's and was like, didn't want to be there. So I ran away. Mm-hmm. Like I did the one thing I always knew how to do, which was run.
Yeah.
And I got arrested and.
What'd you get arrested for?
For running away. Like oh. they picked me up, arrested me, and they sat me down. They're like, okay, you have two options. You can go back to your mom's or we could lock you up in the detention center. Hmm. I was like, take me away.
Whoa, really? Yes.
I chose to be locked up over going back to my mom's.
Holy shit.
Yeah. And I stayed there until my mom finally agreed to like let my boyfriend's mom take care of me until my grandma would come and pick me up from California. Mm-hmm. Which is a whole weird situation.
Yep. Yeah.
So my grandma eventually like drove out, moved back in with her, started freshman year of high school. Mm-hmm. There were a lot of rumors going around because I had like been gone for a year and I came back like a lot skinnier.
So everybody remembered you.
Yes.
Oh.
Yes.
Wait, this was only like a year?
Yeah, I was only gone for a year. Eighth grade.
I feel like a lot happened.
That was a big year. That. Holy shit.
Yeah, a lot happened. I mean, and prior to that, in seventh grade, like I had been expelled from my middle school in seventh grade and went to some special school that was in a pastor's house.
What'd you get expelled for?
Fighting. Yep. I was not well liked by any girls.
Knew it.
Well, not sure why.
The pastor had
like a classroom in his house.
Was this in Missouri?
No, this was in California on the mountain. Hmm. And that's where my grandparents like sent me.
What religion was this?
Well, I was raised Baptist. Not Southern Baptist. Like California Baptist is very different.
It's Christian.
Christian, yes.
Isn't Christian, like, that's, like, a bunch of shit. Just, like...
That's why she said Baptist.
Yes, but specifically, we went to a Baptist church.
So is the pastor... I'm sorry, I'm just, like, getting this, like, idea of, like, the 1600s, and you're, like, in this wood, like, structure.
Kind of,
good
yeah.
God, man. Yeah.
But it was, like, this room with, like, wood paneling. I mean, really? He kind of isn't wrong.
Wow.
Do they have, like, this old wooden desk? Like,
yeah.
Sweet. See?
Yeah.
Give me shit.
And there was like, it was like me and 10 other kids. And they were also bad kids, you know?
Of course.
So it's like, let's just put a bunch of bad kids together and see what happens.
So it was like religious juvie.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So that was seventh grade. Eighth grade didn't really go to school. So then I was thrown back into public school, high school. Mm-hmm. You know, people remembered me, but I didn't have any friends.
Yeah.
I had like this one girl that we kind of became friends because we had kind of hung out before, mm-hmm. but my grandma didn't like her because she wore a lot of eye makeup. But really, like, she was the good kid. Like, she liked NSYNC and Backstreet Boys.
And didn't?
And at that point, I was into Korn and Marilyn Manson and, you know, everything that went against my Christian values.
Nice.
But, like, I was, like, not allowed to hang out with her because she wore a lot of makeup.
Hmm.
Okay. I was very sheltered in a lot of ways. But, you know, we kind of reconnected and we kind of hung out in school. But she wasn't doing the same things I was doing. Mm-hmm. So, again, like, I started seeking out.
Yeah.
And I never felt like I fit in anywhere at school. Mm-hmm. I kind of, like, hung out with this group and that group and just, like, moved around, never had, like, any tight-knit friends, no attachments to people. Mm-hmm. I would be dating someone one week and then the next week and then the next week, or dating two people at the same time. My reputation was not great. A lot of girls hated me.
Yeah.
So it just was not easy to make friends.
No.
I was skipping school a lot, mm-hmm. Going out in the woods to smoke, and I just didn't care.
Yeah.
You know, I went from being like a pretty good student at one point to just not caring anymore.
Yeah.
I felt like the expectations of me were too great to mm-hmm. like ever meet them. So I was like, fuck it.
Yeah.
I don't care. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my grandma would always tell me, like, if you keep doing this, you're not going to graduate. And in her saying that, all I could hear was like, you're too stupid to graduate.
Oh.
Yeah. That's the way I interpreted it.
Mm-hmm.
So that just fed that little voice that said, oh, you're not good enough.
Mm-hmm.
So high school pretty much like went like that. I mean, by this time, though, my dad had been released from prison.
Mm-hmm.
And my grandma was like, you're going to have a relationship with your dad. Because he still hadn't been honest about what had happened. He was lying about it. Mm-hmm. I still was not believed. So my family is a very like close, tight-knit family.
Mm-hmm.
And they're also very much like, let's just sweep everything under the rug, pretend like everything's fine, and just keep things moving.
Mm-hmm.
Very hypocritical, you know?
Yeah.
So I was like forced to like see him and interact, and it just wasn't good.
Yeah.
I didn't feel like how I felt was important to anybody.
Mm.
So high school just continued on using, trying to like maintain, at this point, like by sophomore year, I was going after school to the, bad kid school. I forget what the
juvie.
Yeah. There's like a separate school for kids who are like fucking up.
Yeah.
So I had to go and make up credits. So I would go to regular school during the day and then that other school to make up some credits.
Mm-hmm.
But I like wasn't, you know, doing the stuff I was supposed to be doing. No. I was just fucking around, getting high. And just continued getting in trouble. And by the time I was 18, like, I had had enough of my family. I hated them.
Yeah.
Didn't want to have anything to do with them.
Rightfully so.
I was dating this guy who was joining the military.
Mm-hmm.
Now, prior to this, I was actually enlisted in the Army myself. I enlisted under this DEP program, which is where you enlist when you're 17.
Yeah.
And then as soon as you graduate, they ship you off. I had a ship off date and everything.
Hmm.
But I didn't graduate.
Oh.
I chose to drop out, which it would have been a miracle for me to graduate. I actually have like my little transcript and it shows like my standing in the class of, I think my class had just a little over 200 people, my graduating class.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like the second from the bottom.
Wait, you got like a list and it showed where you stacked up against your fellow students?
Yes.
Yeah.
Does that not seem fucked up?
It didn't like tell anybody's, it didn't tell anybody's names. It just showed that just I was.
It showed that you're at the bottom.
Yes.
It's fucked up. Like,
yes.
That's not cool.
I mean, it's realistic. I mean, they do that in like college. They do that in high school.
That is very uncommon to see. No, okay. Think about that. To see a list on the board and you're at the bottom, like what sort of positive reinforcement is that?
And that's
like,
but
dude, if you're a 14-year-old taking Prozac and heart meds, like
how much motivation are you gonna fucking get? I don't know. That's like very discouraging.
No offense.
You know?
Nothing but love.
So
so you're scraping the bottom of the barrel.
Yes, I was definitely. And I turned 18 in December. Mm-hmm. So there was still a good bit of, you know, my senior year left.
Yeah.
But I moved out immediately. As soon as I turned 18, I was like, fuck this.
Yeah.
I'm out.
Mm-hmm.
But I still like planned on going to school. I'm like, I'm still going to maintain, go to school.
You so what happened to the Army though? That's just dead?
That was dead.
Yeah.
I mean,
dead.
From the moment I didn't graduate, it's like, they just don't take you.
Yeah. They're like, fuck that.
It's like kind of like a way out.
Mm-hmm.
So as soon as I turned 18, I moved out and I like moved in with one of my friends whose mom like let me stay there, which was a very weird situation. I'm like sleeping on the top bunk of his bed and like his little brother sleeping on the bottom bunk, and they're getting up and going to school every day because they were actually in like a grade below me.
Mm-hmm.
They're getting up and going to school every day and I'm just like, no, can't today. I'll go tomorrow.
Yeah.
So I go like weeks and weeks without showing up at school, and then I show up and my teachers are like,
Why the fuck are you here?
Yeah, what? Why are you even here?
Yeah.
And I took that as, like, my permission to never come back again.
Yeah. Do you remember your last day of school?
I do.
Really?
Yeah, I do. I really only went to probably, like, two classes, mm-hmm. which were, like, my electives.
Yeah.
And I went to auto shop, and that was my favorite class. It was mm-hmm. my favorite teacher, and he was the one that asked me, like, why are you even here?
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, you're right. Why?
Yeah.
You're right. So I just, like, got up and walked out.
Yeah. Good point, Mr. Anderson. Deuces.
Yeah. So.
Mic drop. Fuck this school.
So, yeah. So I actually ended up, my boyfriend mm-hmm. that I mentioned was going to the Navy, mm-hmm. and he was getting shipped out soon. Mm-hmm. So I kind of, like, manipulated him into marrying me.
Nice.
Yeah. I basically was like, this is what we're doing.
Cool.
So we went down to the courthouse. We got married against everybody's wishes.
Everybody's fucking advice.
Nobody was on board with this. His parents didn't like me. My family didn't like him. You know, there were all kinds of, like, red flags.
Win-win, really. Yeah.
Yeah.
For an 18-year-old rebel, that's a win-win.
Yeah, so we got married, and his dad actually was like, okay, well, you're married now, so you're doing these things. And he actually helped us get, like, a little apartment.
Nice.
Before he got shipped out, mm-hmm. so that I would have a place to live.
Yes.
So
makes sense.
He gets shipped out. I'm living in this apartment. This is the first time I'm ever alone.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I could do anything.
Yeah.
And I did.
Yep.
My house became the party spot.
Yeah.
I started dealing.
Yep.
It just became, like, one big party. And I wasn't being faithful to my husband. Mm. And I was just running around, just acting crazy. And I started mm-hmm. doing new drugs, you know. New things started being introduced.
What drugs?
So, I don't know if, like, they're the same as they are out here, but I was doing speed and coke.
Sound like Adderall? Or coke, about, like, crystal meth?
So, it wasn't crystal meth. It's
speed, it's like speed. Diet pills and shit.
Like dextrin, amphetamines and stuff like that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Diet pills.
You've
seen Requiem for a Dream.
I've taken diet pills a few times and make my, like, I felt like my heart was going to explode.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I didn't really like it.
Yeah.
It's like all the fucking pre-workouts now.
I guess.
You're just pounding diet pills. That's yeah. all you're doing.
So.
I'm kidding.
So, at this point, I was doing, like, shrooms, acid, speed.
Holy shit.
Smoking lots of weed, drinking
yeah.
a lot.
Yeah.
And this is every day. This is an everyday thing.
Yeah.
And I ended up getting evicted from this apartment after maybe 3 months there.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Nice.
And, you know, his dad, I guess, I'm not sure, but I'm pretty sure his dad had, like, co-signed or put up some sort of money to get us there.
Yeah.
So it was, like, a big problem.
Yeah.
That I got evicted. And I was shipped down to live with his mom,
mm-hmm.
who lived on an Indian reservation.
What?
Yes. because at this point, they're like, okay, well, you're married to our son, and basically we're going to, like, keep you on lock and key until he gets back. You know, so I had, like, this short little burst of freedom of mm-hmm. doing whatever I wanted, and then I screwed it all up.
Yeah.
So I had to move to this Indian reservation that was, like, a 2 to 3 hour drive from where the mountain is.
This is still in California?
Yes. Okay. In Temecula.
Okay.
So I'm living on this Indian reservation, basically a prisoner. You know, I'm not allowed to leave. I don't have a vehicle. I'm forced to get a job working at their government center.
Hmm.
You know, and I didn't have anything. Like, I couldn't get anything. It was just like,
fuck.
It was like being locked up.
You couldn't get any of the white man's fire water. I'm really glad I just said that. That was okay. funny. That was a good one. Everybody get a good chuckle out of that one.
So they, like, left for a weekend and left me at the house.
Game on.
And I stole their van.
Nice.
Yep.
And drove it back to the mountain.
Tijuana.
No. Although very close to there.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, but I drove the van back up to the mountain so that I could, like, gather up as many, like, drugs as I possibly could, like, take back with me.
Yeah.
Because I needed a stash there.
Of course. Yeah.
So I did that. I don't know if they knew that I took the van or not. It's still, like, a question mark. Do they know? I don't know. I do know that I owe them an amends.
I'm sure
I was not. I should be grateful that they took me in and helped me out, but I wasn't. I was the complete opposite. Mm-hmm. So their son finally finished basic training,
mm-hmm.
and he was stationed to Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, they're like, okay, well, you're moving to Virginia.
Yep.
I'm like, cool. Okay.
That's a huge culture shock.
Yes.
Southern California in Indian reservation to Virginia.
Yes. I had no idea what to expect. I had never.
Have you ever been to the East Coast?
No.
Okay.
What part of Virginia again?
Norfolk, Virginia. Yeah.
Norfolk's nice.
No, it's not.
Okay.
It's a weird place.
Fuck me. Everybody in Norfolk, you have one third of the people here rooting for you.
It's a weird place. I agree. Yeah, it's weird.
And it was just really weird. Coming from California, I didn't know what to expect.
I'm sure.
But like he had like a little apartment set up for us just outside of Bays, not in a great neighborhood. But it was like, okay, cool. Like we're on our own. We're away from both of our families. This is going to be great.
Hashtag adulting.
At 19.
I'm still 18. Yeah, I still hadn't turned 19.
That's a legal adult.
Yeah.
Can't legally drink, but whatever.
So it's like as soon as I got there, as soon as I arrived, it's like the shoe dropped and his whole demeanor changed. And he was like, so here's the deal. You're my wife. You're not supposed to speak unless spoken to. You're here to serve me.
Fuck.
Yeah.
Wow.
You know, he believed that I was his property.
Damn.
Huh.
Yeah. So, like, if a dish was left dirty in the sink and he came home from work, I was getting beat.
Oh, my God.
And he was very, like, anti-smoking, anti-drugs. Drinking was fine, though, because, I mean, Navy.
Yeah. Fucking Navy.
So that's, like, very socially acceptable.
Yeah, of course.
So we would drink all the time, and he would become violent and angry and jealous if I was talking to another guy. And I was always scared.
Yeah.
And I felt very stuck. And he would like go out to sea for like 2 weeks at a time to do workups. And in that time I would be doing drugs and partying, doing whatever I wanted to do. And then he'd come back and he'd be like back to like just being basically being locked up again, you know, having someone control my life.
Yeah.
So he finally, got sent off for a 6 month deployment. And I couldn't have been happier.
Yeah.
And that's when things really went downhill for me as far as using goes.
Mm-hmm.
I had got this brilliant idea that I was going to go visit my mom because, you know, I'm on the East Coast now. It's close to Missouri, relatively, driving-wise anyways.
It's closer, like 1,000 miles.
It's closer to drive from Virginia than it is California.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I wouldn't say it's close, though.
It's not
close.
No,
it's not close.
It is not
closer.
It is not close.
Yes, it's closer. She's right.
But, you know, I hadn't seen her since I was, you know, like 13, 14 when I left. And hadn't really talked to her much either. You know, I carried a lot of resentments.
Mm-hmm.
But I decided, you know, I'm going to go visit her. Maybe things have changed. Because, you know, when I was a kid, I would sit and fantasize about my mom. You know, about, like, what kind of mom she was and, like, what kind of mom I wanted her to be. That was, like, my first escape from reality. It was, like, thinking about, like, what my life would be if my mom came and rescued me.
Yeah.
you know? And that's all I ever wanted. I always wanted my mom to be there to love me. So yeah. I was always seeking that. The same way, like, I always seeked, like, validation from men because of my dad. Mm-hmm. I was always, like, wanting my mom's love, too.
Yeah.
So I go to visit her. And my stepdad, my like sixth stepdad, but my stepdad, you know, he smoked weed. So I thought, oh, this is cool. You know, we can hang out, we can smoke weed. And, you know, I would go to the bar with my mom and they would serve me alcohol. And I'm like, this is cool. Yeah. I kind of like this town now.
Yeah. Not such a shithole after all.
So, you know, I started like linking up with some people that I knew from when I lived there before, because nobody leaves this town. They stay there forever.
Yep.
So I linked up with some people and started, you know, using with them, and they introduced me to crystal meth. My first introduction to it was like, do you do coke? Yeah, I do coke. Here, this is the same thing, basically.
No,
I
haven't done meth, but no,
that was a bold-faced lie. But once I started, I couldn't stop. And I couldn't stop, even though I hated the way it made me feel. I hated myself and everybody around me. I'm not really an angry person. This turned me into an extremely angry and violent person. And I started doing things that, for one, I had like no reason to do them. I started like going around stealing, robbing places with this group of people that I was hanging around with, because, you know, you get really fucked up and like, that's what you do when you're on crystal meth. You go around and steal shit.
Yeah, that seems legit.
Yeah.
I can't imagine anybody, like, what the fuck is the point of meth? Like, what,
I don't know.
What the fuck? Like, cocaine.
Like methamphetamines or like crystal meth in general?
Crystal meth. Like cocaine is like used in like some medical, like for anesthesia and shit like that, or like derivatives
like
of it.
Like a lot of stuff with your eyes.
Yeah, like lidocaine is a derivative of cocaine, blah, 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 blah. What the fuck is the point of crystal meth?
To get really high.
To get really fucked up.
What do you mean? That's the only point.
Like, even Bob Ross would probably stab somebody on crystal meth. Yes. He's the nicest human ever.
He would paint a really pretty picture.
Or horrifying.
Horrible.
Yeah.
Horrifying.
Horrifying.
Yes.
Yeah. Mr. Rogers would bite your face off on meth.
You know, so like I said, once I started, I couldn't stop, and I was willing to do anything to get more.
Yeah.
And the people I was hanging out with, clearly, they weren't very good people either. And I remember this one time, like, my bank card went missing. And this is what I'm saying. I didn't have to go out and rob people to get drugs. I had money.
Yeah.
But my bank card,
meth, so fuck it.
Yeah. My bank card went missing, and, you know, nobody, you know, knew where it went.
Yes, of course.
But they came back hours later with $400 worth of crystal meth. The exact amount that was missing from my bank account.
That's a coincidence.
And all I could do was I was like, oh, cool, you guys are going to share all this meth with me? Cool.
Yeah, awesome.
You know?
I just bought us all meth.
Yeah, but it didn't, like, that didn't compute. I mean, I had already been up for, like, 2 weeks at this point. Like,
oh, God.
Yeah. All I knew was, like, they put a pile of drugs in front of me, and everything was fine.
Yeah.
I did end up finding out who stole my bank card, and I did end up beating him with a metal pipe, but that's a whole nother story.
Holy fuck, meth is crazy.
Yes. Because you can't imagine me doing that, can you?
No. For the record, anybody who's listening to this, Kim is sweet as pie. So her high on meth beating somebody with a pipe is completely not something you would see.
Yeah.
Eric's like, no, I can totally see it.
I can totally see it. What are you talking about?
So... This became like a very crazy time for me. I still had my apartment in Virginia, but I was staying in this empty house, flea infested house.
In a bando.
So my boyfriend back from when I lived there when I was 13, his parents, like, loved and adored me still.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. Had kept in contact with me over the years.
And wait, they had 13-year-old... Wait, when you were 13?
Yeah. Yeah, they, like, looked at me as, like, their daughter, you know? They took me in, cared for me, so...
God, I wish everybody could see Eric's face right now.
I had gone to... So I went and visited them, you know, and they had told me that they had sold... Their house was for sale.
Uh-huh.
And it's, like, this house that was, like, out really in the middle of, like...
Yeah, it's a fucking boons.
Yeah. And they're like, yeah, it's just sitting there empty. You can go stay in it if you want. I was like, yes.
Holy,
you know, because at this point, like, things were not going good with me being at my mom's. I mean, she, like, knew I was on drugs.
I'm
like,
sure.
She was, like, calling me a crack whore and, like, aww, you know, just, like, didn't.
Doing meth, mom.
Yeah, but I wasn't, like, you know, being honest. I was like, I'm not doing anything. What are you talking about? So I went and stayed in this house. It was, like, flea infested and empty. There was, like, a bed in one of the rooms, and that was it. And
yeah,
and they were trying to sell this house too. So I was, like, choosing to live there, keeping my apartment in Virginia. Okay. And at some point I had got the brilliant idea that I was going to go back to Virginia, like, check on my stuff and bring a bunch of my stuff back to Missouri.
Oh.
So I did that, you know, I drove 17 hours straight.
Of course, you're on meth.
High. Why not? High as a kite. Spent a little, like, a week or two in Virginia, hanging out, catching up with my friends there.
You slept for, like, 3 days straight in Virginia, didn't you?
Yeah, I finally probably did sleep.
Probably crashed.
Yeah. But I was only there for a short time, packed up my truck, and, like, drove back, because that's where I needed to be. Because that's where...
That's where the meth was.
That's where it was. Mm-hmm. And that's all I wanted. But at the same time, I didn't want it. You know, there was, like, this internal battle going on inside. So I get back there and I'm, like, dating this guy.
While you're married.
While I'm married.
Nice.
You know, dating this guy, and, you know, he's been shooting meth since he was, like, 12.
Jesus,
you know, Christ. So he's, like, real deep in it.
I didn't even know you could do that.
What?
Shoot meth.
Oh.
You didn't know that?
Of course you can.
Yeah, why the fuck would I know that?
I don't know. I just feel like it's, like, drug knowledge you should know. I don't know.
Well, it's in there now.
Yes. Yeah. So, yes, he was doing that. So he was, like, deeper into it.
Fuck.
And,
Drugs suck, everyone. Jesus Christ.
Like, 12 years old and shooting meth. Like, that's
fucking Christ. Wild. And you're only, what, 19, 20 at this point?
Yeah.
Fuck.
Yeah. So, yeah, we're just still, like, running around high all the time.
Did he have any teeth left?
Yeah, he did. Yeah. Oh. I don't know if he does now.
Well, he was shooting it, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah. I was smoking it and snorting it, so I'm lucky I have teeth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or a nose.
Yeah. So, chaos of running around, robbing these places. The cops were, like, catching on to us. This is a small town.
I'm running around
driving a truck with Virginia plates on it.
I'm also
bouncing checks all over this town.
Jesus.
And lots of chaos is happening within the group of people that I'm hanging around. You know,
yeah.
People are starting to not like me. And I started to get the sense that I needed to leave.
Mm-hmm.
But before, like, I could say that, this guy I was dating decided that he was going to leave me. And I was like, oh no, you don't get to leave me.
Yeah.
And I remember being so fucked up, and he is running down this dirt road, and I'm chasing him in my truck, like, yelling out my window at him because he has, like, a cell phone that I want back or something, you know. But I'm chasing him.
I can't wait till we make a movie out of your life.
Yeah, I know.
I'm chasing him, and I'm yelling, and I can't think of anything else to say to get him to stop other than I'm pregnant.
Oh shit!
I did not think I was pregnant. I didn't. I was just saying it to get
were
me
you
stopped.
Actually pregnant?
So.
Oh, fuck.
See, yeah, movie.
Yes. Screenplay so, movie. Yeah. Somebody buy the rights to this,
so
please.
I catch up with him later in the day, like at his mom's house, and his mom's like, are you pregnant? I'm like, I think so. I'm gonna play this as far as it will go.
You're gonna spin that yarn.
So she's like, well, you need to go to Planned Parenthood and get tested.
Yeah.
I was like, okay. I don't know what I was thinking, you know, because I really didn't think I was pregnant. I was like, we're just gonna make this happen. So I go and they test me, and the woman comes back. She's like, you are pregnant, very pregnant. Like,
holy fuck.
I'm like, oh.
Toads.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
I know.
Shit. This is happening. This is real. So I go back and I tell them, and I think at the time there was like this drama going on where he was trying to get back with his ex-girlfriend.
All right.
So that whole group like turned on me, and it became really ugly. And it was like this mob of people.
Yes, so, but, mob okay. of methods.
We just kind of like
mob of methods.
The mob of methods literally. Is good, but we did just kind of like cruise over this whole part of willing a child into existence.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean,
yeah.
Just glazed over that. You know?
Yeah.
Just willed it into existence on a dirt road in Missouri.
Seriously, it's crazy how like things happened.
Yeah,
like it's absolutely insane. Mm-hmm. So the mob of meth heads, you know, is angry, and I get the sense sure. that I need to leave this, this town.
In my mind, they're holding torches.
I mean, so. I'm like, I have to leave. And it was like that night, yeah. I packed up my truck with as like much stuff as I could, left a lot of stuff behind that I really cared about.
Yeah.
You know, like my childhood baby blanket that meant like so much to me, gone.
Yeah.
You know, not important enough.
No.
And I like stopped by my mom's house, told her I was pregnant, told her I was leaving.
See ya.
I'm gone. Gotta go back to Virginia.
Where you have a husband.
Yes, where I have a husband who's about to come back from his 6-month deployment.
Oh my God.
To a pregnant wife.
Oh my God.
That's not good.
No.
No.
So I left that town, and the next day I got a phone call from the people who own the house telling me that someone had come and busted out all the windows of that house.
Wait, which is this, Virginia or is this Missouri?
No, this was in Missouri.
The 13-year-old ex-boyfriend Aaron House.
I'm sorry, yes. We're following this.
Keep up, Aaron. Yeah. Jesus Christ. You
know so I mean? That mob of meth heads had gone to that house
and fucked it up.
And fucked it up because they thought they were looking for me.
Oh shit.
Yeah. So it's a good thing I left.
Yep.
You know, I was right to do that.
That's good.
Mm-hmm. But I left all this like destruction behind me. You know, I didn't care either. I was like, oh, well, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
It's not my fault.
Yeah. I'm gone.
Yeah. Sorry.
I'm in Kentucky right now.
Don't call me anymore.
Bye.
I don't think they love you anymore.
Actually, they do.
Oh.
Still in contact with them today.
Wow.
Yes.
Sorry, what was that?
Shut up, Eric. Shut the fuck up, Eric.
So I come back to Virginia. Husband comes home. And I tell him I'm pregnant. Because
I could see him being like a meathead and be like, well, how'd you get so fat?
Well, yeah, I mean, he always did call me fat. I was anorexic also, by the way. I had an eating disorder, and he was a meathead in the gym 4 hours every day. He wanted to be a Navy SEAL. Mm. So I tell him I'm pregnant, and I kind of see this as my like way out. You know, because he didn't want to have kids, and he definitely wasn't going to want someone else's kid.
No.
So I tell him that, but I also make sure that I tell other people, like, I am meeting up with him to tell him this because I'm actually afraid for my life.
Yeah.
And I tell him, and his response was, well, if you have an abortion, we can make this work. I'm like, no.
Yeah.
Mm-mm, that's not happening. Mm. So he like leaves and becomes very angry, and I have to get like a restraining order against him You know, he threatens to kill me multiple times. Mm-hmm. It's just very ugly.
Yeah.
At this point, I realized, like, I needed to... I had stopped doing meth. Mm-hmm. I realized I needed to stop doing everything.
Yeah.
You know, I had always wanted to be a mom. I think part of me thought that that's what was missing and that would make me whole.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to do what was best. And I was already worried that I had fucked up my child from using meth for, like, the first trimester. Because I didn't find out I was pregnant until almost the second.
Wow.
So I was, like, really worried about what was going to happen. So I just, like, cold turkey stopped.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, like, I was crazy and felt the way I felt because of, like, all the hormones of being pregnant. And now I know, like, I was going through withdrawal. But, like, at the time, I didn't know what that was because I had always just been using constantly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I had no concept of being addicted to something.
Mm-hmm.
All I knew was, like, this is what I do every day to feel different. And that's it.
Mm-hmm.
So that pregnancy was very rough. In the course of that pregnancy, I also met somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And he was, like, this knight in shining armor. He was also in the military. And he's like,
I'm going to take... Navy?
Yes.
Mm.
And he's like, I'm going to take care of you. That's going to be my baby. And everything's going to be all right.
Oh.
I'm like, oh, okay. This is nice. Another guy to take care of me because I sure can't take care of myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how I'm going to take care of a baby.
Mm-hmm.
So we move in together. I remember our first date, and he took me out to eat, and I remember, like, basically boo-hooing to him about how I couldn't afford my phone bill, and he, like, slipped some money in my back pocket.
Oh.
You know, and I'm like, yes, I got him, you know?
Oh.
Like, I was always manipulating men to, like, give me what I wanted.
Yeah.
While and also, we're stupid. Like...
We're stupid.
Giving them something in return, you know.
Yes.
So I have my daughter.
Mm-hmm.
I actually almost died during childbirth. She almost died too.
Mm-hmm.
There were complications and it was very scary. I had an emergency C-section and I was alone because he was on the ship and couldn't get off.
Yeah.
But you know, when you have a C-section, they put, like, drugs into your spine.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember that rush, that feeling
mm-hmm.
coming over me again. And it wasn't long after I had her that I was just right back to using. And this time I was like, you know, I can't use street drugs. That's wrong. You know, being a mom, I'm like, that's morally wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I had also tried smoking weed and it made me like violently sick, like throwing up everywhere, which was really weird.
Strange.
Yeah. Mm. Like my body just had this weird reaction to it. So I'm like, okay, I can't do that anymore. Drinking's fine. And raiding other people's medicine cabinets for pills. That's okay.
Hell yeah.
It's a prescription, right? Doesn't matter. That's not my prescription.
It's not meth.
Yeah, it's not meth.
They would hide their pills better.
It's not meth. It's not coke. You know, it's not any of these other things. It's okay. Mm-hmm. And I'm just self-medicating myself because I'm depressed.
Mm-hmm.
That was like my justification.
You weren't stealing Prozac, were you? Because that'd be kind of weird.
No.
Okay.
No, I'm not stealing Prozac. It was just like Percocets, Oxys, Vicodin, like whatever I could get my hands on. Mm-hmm.
Couple heart meds there, here and there.
Yeah, you know, just sprinkle them in a little bit.
Yeah, why not?
Antidepressants, some mood stabilizers.
So, it wasn't long into, like, being with this guy that I found out he wasn't such a knight in shining armor. I had gone into the relationship really with the best intentions. I wanted to be a better person
mm-hmm.
and be, like, faithful.
Mm-hmm.
I guess he didn't have the same ideas. Like, he went away for 2 weeks for one of his workups and left his phone, and this girl called.
Oh.
And she was like, oh, well, he said he's going to leave you, you know. I'm like, he just proposed to me a week ago. So, that's news to me.
Yeah.
But it started this whole, like, cycle in our relationship of, like, I didn't trust him. He constantly would lie. I would find, like, a second phone, and he'd be like, that's not mine. and I would like play the messages.
He had a burner?
Yeah, and I would play the messages that were like to him. He's like, that's not mine. I don't know what you're talking about.
I'm like cheating? Like,
it could totally be like a
second phone for cheating?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And then
when
I would confront him about it, he would just gaslight me. You know, just like pretend like it wasn't his, like, even though clearly it's like they're leaving messages for you.
Yeah.
You know? And it would just make me feel
David's a really common name. That could be anybody. Yeah.
It would make me feel so crazy. So I had a baby. I was depressed. You know, we were having parties and drinking all the time because, again, Navy, socially acceptable.
Yep.
And I wasn't close to anybody. I didn't have anybody. I didn't have family. I wasn't talking to my family at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt very alone.
Mm-hmm.
And then he ended up... Well, no, I ended up getting pregnant very shortly after having my daughter. And he left for his 6-month deployment, like mid pregnancy. And he was actually gone when I had our son.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't come back until he was 3 months old or something like that. Mm-hmm. So I'm alone, 2 kids, you know,
drug problem.
Yes. Because at this point I had my son and I moved into this new apartment. And my only friend had moved away.
Mm-hmm.
She was gone. So I was really like all by myself. And I was living in Virginia Beach. And the apartment I moved into happened to be right next door to a Coke dealer.
Of course. It's Virginia Beach.
Yeah.
So I have a 1-year-old.
Hollywood doesn't even have to write a script. This can is be amazing. This is amazing.
Amazing.
So I have a 1-year-old and a 2-week-old. And I start doing Coke again. And I'm I'm leaving my kids alone at night to go party because in my mind they're babies, they're fine, they're like confined to a crib, nothing is going to happen.
Yeah.
And nothing did, thank God.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm very lucky that nothing happened, but like just to have like that's something I would never do today.
Yeah.
So. Things just continued on like that. He came back. I like hid what I was doing. And we moved around a lot. I mean, when you're in the military, you just move around a lot. And what that life did for me, it afforded me like, I was able to put this like wall up between me and everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we would move. People would start to get to know me and they would start to see through like my mask. And then we would leave.
Yep.
You know, so no one ever got to know the real me. There was no one ever around to, like, see there was a problem.
Uh-huh.
And to say something. No help. And then we moved up here to Maryland.
Uh-huh.
And that was in...
Lovely place, Maryland.
Yes. That's
great place. Great place.
So we moved to Maryland in 2010.
Uh-huh.
And... we, you know, linked up with this group of people, the guys that he worked with and their wives, and basically our house became the house to like party and have cookouts at and lots of drinking. And this was our first time like where he was stationed shore duty, which means he's not going out to sea.
Yeah.
So he's never gone.
Yeah.
And this is the first time we're somewhere where like people are actually going to get to know me. And I made a mess of it really quick. By the end of 2010, I had been caught cheating on him with someone who was also in the Navy, which is a very big offense.
Yes.
And you can actually be kicked out of the Navy for that.
Yep.
Not me, but the guy that I was sleeping with could have been kicked out.
Yes.
So yeah,
that's a real thing.
So that's when the mask, like, cracked and everybody like saw me for who I was. And I didn't know what to do anymore except for just keep running, you know.
Yeah,
just keep running. And like drinking more and doing more. And at this point I was also doing Adderall. My life was kind of like this cycle of like get up, use like stimulants to like make it through the day, to like take care of my kids the bare minimum.
Yep.
And then at night it was like drinking and pills to like come back down.
You got a Wolf of Wall Street that shit.
Yeah. And that was like every day for me.
You're welcome, Eric. That's a great reference.
That was every day for me, and I would spend a lot of my days locked in the bedroom just wanting to die. Mm-hmm. My kids were like kicking and screaming at the door, and I was in my bedroom thinking that the only way that I could be a good mom was killing myself. Mm-hmm. I didn't see any other way. Huh. And that's just where my life was at. And in around this time, I ended up getting a DUI. Mm-hmm. I had gone out. My birthday's on New Year's Eve.
Yep.
I had gone out with this group of friends to a Mexican restaurant on the 30th to pregame for my birthday a whole day in advance.
Of course. That's, yep.
That's normal.
Simple math.
So, you know, we like shut the Mexican restaurant down. Like, they're like, you guys gotta go. You know, they were closed. Don Pablo's.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
We were just there, like, drinking until they were like, you got to leave.
Yeah. Slamming tequila sunrises all night. Yeah,
so we left, and it was like, I was like, I'm not drunk enough. I'm not ready to go home. And it was like one other guy was like, same.
Yeah, fucking party.
Yeah, so we went to, like, we went to this bar, and started drinking shots of Patron, which is not a friend of mine. And I knew that, you know.
That's not a friend of anybody who's not Hispanic. You are part Hispanic. Part. That doesn't count. No.
So, not good. I don't remember leaving the bar. Apparently I convinced this guy that I was fine to drive. This is what he told me. He's like, you were very convincing, blah, blah. We got, like, maybe a light away from the bar, and I got pulled over.
What county?
PG.
Oh.
Yeah.
Not fun.
No. So I got pulled over, and I like remember like certain parts of that night, you know. So yeah. I remember trying to hand the, I couldn't find my purse, and I was handing the cop my credit card, but I thought it was my ID. So at this point, he's telling me to get out of the car.
And
I'm doing a field sobriety test on the side of the road.
Yep.
And I can't.
No.
And I'm telling the cop, I can't do this. I'm too drunk. Just arrest me.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I remember that. And then I remember being, like, taken in for the breathalyzer, and I had, like, snake bite piercings.
Nice.
And they wanted me to take those out before I did the breathalyzer, and I couldn't get them out. And they were, like, yelling at me because they thought I was stalling. I'm like, I can't get them out. It was, like, a mess.
Yeah. Okay?
Finally, like, they release me. Like, my friend, who was also drunk, like, they let him drive my car to, like, the station and then drive me home.
What?
Yeah.
Yep, that's PG County, buddy.
What?
So, but I remember they took me to, like, Jessup.
Yep.
Yeah. And that was right down the street from Fort Meade. So, like, he drove me home. I got home. My husband was not happy.
Yeah.
You know. And I had, like, you know, 8 tickets or whatever. How many ever tickets they write you?
So many, yeah. You had so many charges.
And I was still, like, wasted. Like, not just, like, drunk. I was still wasted. So I, like, just went to sleep. And now this is the morning of my birthday.
Yeah.
So at some point, I have to compose myself, get ready, and go back out and do it again.
Nice.
And this time I was like, you know what? The only mistake I made last night was driving.
Okay.
I was like, we're going to get a cab tonight.
Okay.
So went out, drank. And basically I was just like, I wanted to ignore what had happened and deal with it later. We're just going to deal with this later. So finally, when I finally like sober up, which felt like days later, I get a lawyer. Mm-hmm. I go meet with him. you know, I've never been in like this kind of trouble before. Like I have an assault charge from before. So I'd been to court for that. That was the only thing I'd ever been to court for.
There's no so many ins and outs.
Yeah, man.
It's so great.
So much depth.
So I get this lawyer. He's expensive.
Yep.
I felt good about it. I'm like, okay, he's going to help me out.
Yeah.
And he told me, he's like, okay.
I'm a Navy
like,
wife.
he read through the police report, and he got to the point of my, like, breathalyzer. And he's like, okay, here's what I want you to do. You need to go to this place, and you're going to do this program, and they're going to give you a certificate, and it's going to look really good in front of the judge.
Yeah.
I know you're familiar with this place. It's across the street from the Columbia Mall.
Oh, yeah.
We've talked about this. 100%. We've been there. Yeah, I know about that place.
It's a great place.
Yeah.
Lovely.
Yeah, so I went there.
Not super effective, but good.
Yeah. I went there, and...
It's part of our stories.
It wasn't an effective part of my story, though. I didn't actually ingrain any...
Yeah, but you know, how many were effective?
Two.
I see, exactly.
So for me, going to this place was like my first like experience.
I wonder if we had the same counselor. I hope we did.
So I don't know what to expect. I've never been through anything like this. So I sit down in an intake, and this woman starts asking me all these questions. And at this point, I get the sense that I need to lie to her.
Of course. Yep. You lie to that motherfucker.
And, you know, when she was asking me, like, do I do any other drugs? I'm like, no, I just drink occasionally. I just happen to get too drunk and drive.
It was,
you know,
my,
like,
birthday.
Yeah, like, you know, yeah. I don't drink that much, even, you know?
Yeah.
You know, so I lied. So... They're like, okay, well, you'll do this, you know, whatever.
Mm.
So I show up to this program for however long it was, and I actually, like, sat and listened, and I remember going home and telling my husband, I'm like, maybe I have a problem.
Yeah.
Maybe I do.
Was that the very first time you were like, maybe I have a fucking problem?
Yes.
Holy shit.
How old were you?
This was in 2025-ish?
Wait, what year was this?
2010 and 2011. Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
So hold on. You're in Missouri with the meth mob, never thinking you have a fucking problem.
Willing children into existence with your, like...
That's...
I mean, the only sense I ever got was like, okay, maybe the drugs I'm doing are, like, this is wrong. I'm doing something wrong.
Okay, so the drugs were the problem, not Kim.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. I always looked at my like drug use, and I never even called it drug use. I never even called it using
or partying.
Like, it was either I was partying or like I was just self-medicating.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I never, like, for me, like, getting high was like just to fix the way I felt.
Yeah,
it was definitely more so for that. The partying just kind of like came along with it, and that was also just a mask I put on to be socially acceptable.
Mm.
I didn't care. I would have preferred to use by myself.
Hell yeah.
You
know?
But to be, like, socially acceptable, you have to do certain things.
That shit. You fucking hermits. Both of you. You're fucking weird.
So.
If I could just get a pile of meth and a fucking good book, I'd be fine.
Yes.
That sounds like a great time.
Jesus.
100% would fuck me up.
I don't know. So, I mean, I only used around other people because either they were supplying the drugs...
Or stealing your bank card and providing you with your own drugs.
Yeah. That, or I was just trying to be, like, drinking with everyone and be socially accepted while I was, like, going upstairs and snorting pills.
Just keeping up appearances.
Yes. Yeah. I always was all about, like, looking put together on the outside.
Yeah. Okay.
So, yeah. So this was my first time when I, like, heard other people that I, like, could relate to.
Mm-hmm.
Or, like, they were speaking to me about things I felt.
Yeah.
I'm like, maybe I have a problem.
Mm.
But it was like a day later when I was like, nah.
Nah, fuck that.
No.
I'm cool.
I'm fine. So, you know, my court date eventually came. I went out and bought a very expensive, like, pantsuit, wore some pearls, like, dressed it up real nice.
Nice.
and went in, and my lawyer was like, okay, so you have like two options here. You can just go plead guilty. You know, the judge will give you your sentence, whatever, or you can plead not guilty and we could take this to trial.
Don't tell me how you did
that. I don't know how this ends.
Tell me you did that.
So I was like, well, if we, and the one question I had was like, if we take it to trial, will my blood alcohol level come up?
Yes.
And he told me, no, I don't think it'll get that far because I have two good arguments.
Kim.
Ooh. I'm like, all right, let's take this to trial.
Roll them fucking bones. Love it.
I really believed I was just going to like get out of it. You know,
nice.
I thought I like looked good enough. I was a Navy wife. Like nobody's going to do anything to me, you know?
No.
So my lawyer's two good arguments failed.
How long had you been in Maryland for this point? Like 2 years?
I mean, maybe not even a year.
Holy
no, it was
shit.
Like a year, probably.
So you're like, fucking Maryland sucks. Okay. Two arguments.
Yes, two arguments failed. So then...
What were the arguments?
So the argument was like, I like swerved in the lane. I didn't swerve like out of the lane.
Oh.
What the
yes.
fuck?
Really? And then the second argument was it was a PG cop that pulled me over on the other side of the bridge just out of his jurisdiction.
Oh.
Like the lights were on in PG, but I was actually pulled over in another county.
That's what he... What a fucking dick.
Yes.
That lawyer sucked.
So,
he scammed you out of money.
Yes. So... Went to trial and, you know, everything came out. And as soon as the judge heard my blood alcohol level,
what was it?
It was high. I can't remember the exact number. I actually have the paperwork somewhere still.
Ooh, yes.
But basically it was high enough. They told me that I should have been in the hospital. Like no person like of my like size should have been functioning at all.
That's amazing.
So... As soon as that came up, I was screwed. The judge, like, stopped and looked at me and was like, you can't come into my court and dress up and fool me. You know, she's like, you, just because you're a Navy wife, like, she basically saw right through me and told me exactly who I was.
Fuck.
And she's like, this is what you're going to do. I'm going to give you... PBJ for a year.
Nice.
And you're going to go to these meetings.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, what is that? But I still felt good about it. I left there feeling like, oh, unsupervised probation.
Yeah.
You know,
yep.
Like my lawyer like played the whole like, oh, she's a military wife. She's like,
she's not a flight risk. Yeah. All this.
So like, I felt like I still got the best result I could.
Yeah.
So I walked out of there. But I walked out of there with the attitude of, like, fuck that judge. Like, she doesn't know me.
Yeah.
Like, how can she say those things? And then I, like, looked through all this paperwork of all these things I had to do. You know, I had to go, like, to the Mothers Against Drunk Driving stuff and, you know, then go to these meetings. And I had no idea what these meetings were. I had kind of heard about them, you know. Throughout, like, growing up, like, when my grandparents would take us on cruises, they would have, like, meetings for people in these rooms, and my grandma would, like, make a comment about it, and that was, like, the only awareness I had. I had the only other awareness I had of recovery was I used to watch that show,
Intervention?
Yes.
Intervention.
I used to watch Intervention while I was drinking and getting high.
I did too.
And I would sit there and think,
bummer,
like,
though.
I can fix those people.
You can, wait, what?
I said,
that's your thought?
Yeah, that was my thought.
You're not
like,
thinking, like, I'm better than those people. I'm not as bad as those people. You're like, I can fix them.
Yeah, I was like.
She didn't even think she had a problem with the Missouri meth mob, dude.
Yeah, I was like, I want to become an addictions counselor and help these people. That was my thought when I would watch that show. So that was like the only idea I had about like recovery.
Man, you crazy bitch.
Well, I mean, I also had never had anybody in my life like tell me that I might have a problem.
Yeah.
I mean, through all the times that I got caught with drugs growing up, you know, or got caught drinking, like, so let me tell you this story. And this is like, how did my family not do anything at this point blows my mind. Mm-hmm. We had gone on a cruise and it was my birthday and we were like on, I think it was a cruise to Mexico, and our cabin steward like was flirting with me. Okay. So
how
I
old
meet,
are you?
I'm like 16.
Okay.
All right. And I immediately see an opportunity to manipulate this person. And I convince him to get me a bottle of Absolute vodka. You know, I was like, that's what I want. Because he's like, oh, I'll give you a bottle of champagne for your birthday. I'm like, I don't want that.
Fuck champagne.
You know? So he gets that for me. And
gassy.
I like go to this cabin and drink with like the other teenagers or whatever. But the cabin steward's there too. And he's like dancing and grinding on me. You know, and he's probably like in his 20s.
Yeah.
You know, I ended up getting very drunk, blackout drunk. And my grandparents came back to find me like passed out on the bed with this boy like sitting next to me trying to take care of me. Okay. They ended up getting a free cruise out of it. You know, I'm sure the cabin steward got fired.
Yeah.
But it's like those kind of things would happen. And there was never like, does Kim need help?
Yeah.
You know, it was, again, just like Kim's a bad kid.
Yeah.
So anyways, like there was lots of like things like that that would happen, but no one ever like tried to get me help. So I never believed I had a problem. Okay. So I had to start going to these meetings and I was very scared, you know, and I waited until I had like a week or two left to complete my court ordered,
oh, of course,
you know,
yeah,
signing of these sheets or else I was going to violate my probation.
Wait, how many meetings do you have to go to?
I think I had to go to like 15 or something.
That's doable.
Yeah, it was doable. So I started looking up online and I got it in my head, like I couldn't be using or drinking and go to these meetings because they would kick me out and then I wouldn't get my slip signed and I would violate probation.
Wow. You know nothing about the fellowship.
No, I knew nothing.
You knew nothing. Yeah.
So like I stopped cold turkey, detoxed myself, which was horrible, miserable. I didn't even know that like rehab was an option for me. Like I always thought that was like people on intervention or celebrities went to rehab.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And again, I didn't even understand what was going on. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't know how I didn't, but I just didn't.
Yeah.
I'm a smart person.
Yeah.
But, when it came to that, I just was like very stupid. So I started going to these meetings. I remember my first meeting and I went back home and I told my husband, this is a cult. It's like a religion. They just want me to believe in God. Not down with this. Like God was like shoved down my throat growing up. So yeah. It was like something I was not cool with.
Yeah, clearly with the pastor of fucking school.
Yeah. So, you know, I had to continue going, had no choice. And the more I went, the more like I felt better. I would come home and I would just feel better. I would feel mm-hmm. different. And I didn't really understand why,
mm-hmm.
but I was feeling like hope that like my life could be different.
Mm-hmm.
And like I've been in recovery ever since.
Yeah.
A lot has happened in this almost 8 years.
Yeah.
I left my husband, you know, because really I was only with him for money.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't a relationship that either one of us were happy in.
Yeah.
And I remember when I told him that I wanted to leave, he was like, I wish that you'd never gotten clean because we'd still be happy.
Oof.
Ugh. I'm like, I wasn't happy.
No.
You know, I don't know if that was just like his delusion or if I had like manipulated the situation enough that he really believed that we were happy. So I left that relationship and it was the first time that I like didn't know what I was going to do as far as like financially.
Mm-hmm.
I had never like supported myself and now I had two kids to support.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like leaned into the fellowship for that help. You know, I went to meetings and I shared about it and people there like showed up for me, and within like 2 weeks I had a job and a house to live in. And it was like a job that I didn't
think. Was that like the first house?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Dude, that's awesome.
Yeah. And I mean, it was a job that I felt like I had no business doing. You know, I really believed that I was stupid and that I couldn't even like do anything at all. You know, that's like the lie I told myself. The voice in my head constantly told me, I can't.
Yeah.
So that's where like things really took off for me, and I started like showing up for my kids and finding out that my kids needed a lot of help. You know, I have a son who has a lot of like developmental issues and he really needed a lot of support, and I wasn't giving it to him when I was using.
Yeah.
And so recovery for me has been, you know, about like becoming the person, you know, that I want to be, being the mom that my kids deserve. And I really feel like I, for the most part, have achieved that. I've been through a lot of painful stuff. Right after I celebrated my third year, my ex-husband, the father of my children, died in a motorcycle accident. And it's not something I ever thought would happen. And, you know, my first thought was like, I can't use because I need to be there for my kids now more than ever. So that was really hard, you know, but again, like, I went to the fellowship that I'm in and, you know, relied on the people to love me and see me through this. And they did. And in that, I was able to be there for my kids and help them through it. 2 years after that, my brother committed suicide. And my mom was staying with me at that time. And that was a very difficult time. And, you know, he was definitely an addict and just didn't see the hope.
Was that the one you lived with in California?
No.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, this is my, he was my only brother.
Oh, okay.
You know, and he just didn't see the hope in his life. And it's really, it's still hard, you know?
Yeah.
So those are the two like really main things that I've like had to get through clean, you know, and really like not wanting to use over them, you know, like there's other times when I want to use, and that's mostly like when I'm like stressed out and I just want to like cry and like not feel the way I'm feeling. And really that's stress of like navigating how to be a good mom. You know, I mean, that, you know, perfect instance happened today where my son got in trouble at school, and he said some things, you know, and now I'm trying to figure out how to deal with that. But there was a like a brief moment today where I just sat on the end of my bed and cried and was like, I don't want to feel like this anymore. But I called my sponsor. You know, I called my fiance, who is also in the program.
It's Brad.
Yes, it's Brad.
Everybody. Yes. Like, he's been mentioned enough on
so
the podcast.
I am the other half of Brad.
Yes, the better half of Brad is in the house tonight.
You know, so we have this family and this relationship, you know, that is really centered all around recovery. My whole life is centered in recovery. Everybody in my life today, all my friends, and it's great. You know, I've realized after doing some work on myself, like, that I don't have to accept certain things. So I've distanced myself from my family because it's not a healthy thing for me to be involved and put myself in that situation. And really, the people I've met in recovery have become my family. And I love every one of them. My life is completely different than what it used to be. I'm happy, you know, I would say 98% of the time. You know, I don't feel depressed anymore. And life is good. Brad and I had a kid together. And he is 2.5 now, and I'm back at being a stay-at-home mom, mm-hmm. which is such a blessing. It's something that I was really scared to do, though.
Yeah.
Because my previous experience was not so good, and I was not a good mom in that. But today, life is very good. I have 2 middle schoolers. Those are scary waters to navigate.
Yeah.
You know? But they're good kids, you know?
Yeah.
They're doing way better than I was at that age, so I guess I couldn't really ask for more.
Yeah.
So yeah, I guess that's just where my life is today. I just keep going. I, you know, stay involved in the program. I have to keep a very delicate balance between, like, my recovery, like, the things I do in my recovery and my family time. Because at one point, I was just, like, chasing meetings and still not showing up for my kids.
Yeah.
So today, it's all about balancing. Because recovery doesn't just mean going to these meetings or doing step work. It also means, like, game nights at home with my kids.
Yep.
You know, and just sitting with them, like, watching Survivor. Mm-hmm. You know, running and taking them to Boy Scouts or mm-hmm. cadets. Like, it's all these things. That's what recovery is. And that's how I stay clean mm-hmm. each and every day. So I guess that's all I have.
Oh, it was fantastic. I mean, all you have. I mean,
so much to unpack.
So I know, much.
My life has actually been pretty crazy.
It's an amazing story. Like, fucking fantastic. Seriously, swear to God. If somehow a director hears this,
or a
screenwriter.
Hey, won't you?
Yeah. What, do you want me to write Kim's screenplay?
Of course. We can shoot it.
We can get Anna Kendrick.
I mean, there really are so many other stories I could give you.
Oh my God,
in the midst of all that chaos.
I think you can just start with, like, the meth mob and just start with the meth mob and go with that.
Yeah.
So, David, are you going to start with a question?
I am, actually.
Go ahead.
I didn't last week, but now I am. So, how much of your using was sort of an offshoot of life's trauma, like emotional trauma, psychological, emotional,
all of it.
Now, were you conscious of that, or would not really?
I think there was always this like voice, little voice, like deep inside that mm-hmm. like was conscious of it.
Yeah.
But like I would use and like bury that.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I mean, I used the trauma as an excuse my whole life. Like, 100%. I am like this because this happened to
yep.
me.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't until, you know, a couple years into recovery that I realized, like, I don't want to be, like, a prisoner to my past.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I don't have to be that person because of what happened to me.
Absolutely. Yep. Yeah, and it took me a couple years to really figure out that, like, hey, I have daddy issues, and I didn't really think that was a thing for guys, but yeah. it can be, mm-hmm. and it is. I might have another one. I turn the reins over to you, buddy.
Cool.
Hey, okay. I got a dog on my lap.
Yes, this dog is like, man, Lena. All right, let's see. Blah, 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 blah. So, start with something easy. Where were you running?
What? Yeah,
you're always running away. Where to? Like, where was this place that you were running away to?
Anywhere.
Did you just have, like, a place in mind?
No.
Was it, like, an idea?
No, just anywhere I could go to get away from the situation that was happening at the time.
Okay.
You know.
Hmm.
So it was just a reaction. It wasn't really, like, there was no destination.
No, there was no destination. It was always, like, a reaction and just, you know, wherever I landed.
I just felt like running.
Yeah.
Jenny.
Yeah. I mean, I never really put a lot of thought into the actions I was taking.
Based on your story, that does not come through. Everything was very well planned.
Yeah, so well.
Okay, so I guess, like, Luna, chill. So let's do... All right, so... I'm assuming there's abandonment issues that were brought up,
oh,
right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I mean, it doesn't seem like it's just from your parents. It's also from, like, tons of other people,
yeah.
too. Like, how is that something that you've addressed in, I guess, you know, since you've been clean?
Ooh.
That's actually probably the number one thing I've worked on the most because having abandonment issues means I had a lot of walls up. Mm-hmm. I don't trust people. My first 6 months of going to meetings, I didn't talk to anybody. Like, I kind of just, like, sat around, watched people. People would invite me out to coffee with them. I would sit in that group and just, like, sit there. Mm-hmm. Be there. So, yeah, I really had to, at some point, start talking to people, start opening up. I've never been, like, shy of, like, sharing the things that I've been through. That's not a problem for me.
Yeah, no shit.
Yeah. But, like, trusting people, really trusting people was hard for me because, like, I don't believe that I'm worth being loved. Huh. I do now because of all the work I've done.
Yeah.
And that's been through just step work. That's been through letting people into my life and allowing them to love me and show up for me. Huh. And that's really just, like, broken down my walls.
Okay.
So that kind of, like, segues into, like, the next question of, like, and your story is pretty much, like, yearly moving. Mm-hmm. Like, it's like, I'm here, and I'm here, and now I'm here, and now I'm here, and now I'm here, and I'm, like, back here, and, like, it's kind of wild.
All over.
Right? And so how do you prevent, I don't know, because that's kind of, like, built into you now, right? Like, where it's like your instinct is to, like, run, but mm-hmm. you've been settled for a while.
Yeah.
Do you still have that instinct to just dip?
No, not anymore.
Is this the longest time in one place?
This is the longest time I've spent in one place.
Mm. Ever? Wow.
Yeah, ever. I mean, I grew up in California. That's where the majority of, like, my life was spent, but I was still, like, all over the place.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But to be, like, in one, like, town consistently, you know, this is the longest stretch I've had. Mm-hmm. And this is the only time I've ever had friends and relationships with people, like, roots connected. Mm-hmm. Because I can't even, like, look back at high school and be like, oh, I have friends from high school. People who have that, I don't understand. Like, Brad has that. He grew up with people he's known for, like, his whole life. Mm-hmm. And to me, that is weird. I do not talk to anybody I went to school with.
Yeah.
You know, it's like there were people I knew at some point.
Fine,
in time.
I'll stop talking to Brad. Okay. Yeah.
So yeah. So it's very different now. I have, like, people that I don't want to ever leave.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's very, it's very foreign to me, but it's such a part of me now.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to leave.
It's good.
Yeah.
Well, that segues into my next question.
Okay.
Which I'm stealing from Eric this week.
What? Which question?
How has your addiction manifested itself?
Oh, wow. Wow.
In recovery.
Oh, man.
Total dick move, David.
It's okay. I got a new question.
Oh, shit. Okay.
Well, it's, you know, come in the form of shopping.
Yep.
You know, I went through this, like, obsession with buying nail polish my first year. Like, clean.
You painted my toenails.
Where I would go on eBay and, like, buy these ridiculously expensive nail polishes because they were discontinued.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. What? It was just this weird obsession.
That's a thing. That's amazing.
Yeah. So, shopping, I mean, food has been, like, a struggle for me, you know, since getting clean, you know, especially coming from having an eating disorder, like, my whole life. I constantly, like, struggle with that and trying to balance and be healthy.
Did you struggle with the eating disorder in recovery at times?
Yeah, at times. I mean, you know, I went to therapy for it at one point and they told me, like, it's something that's always going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and something you're going to have to live with and always constantly be aware of.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's manifested there through just, like, my behaviors. Sometimes I find myself just being, like, manipulative again, lying, stupid lies.
Yeah.
You know, like, I will buy something and it'll be, like, $20, but I'll say I got it for, like, $18. Just the, like, tiny.
It was on sale.
Exactly. Huh? My sponsor, when I told her that, when we were going over, like, my step work, she's like,
that's
why
the dumbest shit
do you do that? You don't have to do that. You know that, right? And I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah. Compulsion.
Yeah. It's just, like, for no reason.
Yeah.
I do stupid stuff.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
Okay. So one of my new questions, which we did the other day,
I forgot.
But we'll do these out of order. What step are you on right now, out of curiosity?
Oh, okay.
Good question. I actually finally just finished my fourth step.
For the second time?
First time.
Kimberly.
For the first time. It's taken me a long time, and there was a lot of procrastination.
Okay.
You know, a lot of complacency. And I also switched sponsors quite a few times in that. Yeah,
and she's a mother of three. Give her a fucking
yeah.
Break.
So it was a lot of
you
like
three cats.
I've worked 1, 2, and 3.
Not as much responsibility.
I've worked 1, 2, and 3 4 times.
Ugh.
You know.
There you go.
So
really, she's done all 12. That's
that is not how it works.
That so, is mathematics. So, no, that is not how it works. So, okay. Anybody who's listening.
Well, so then, which out of the steps that you've worked is your favorite step? And how has it affected your life, like, most? And don't give me the bullshit that everyone says, like, they're all important in their own special way.
I mean...
They are? No.
I think the one I apply the most is... 3.
Okay.
I mean, really...
I was holding on 3. I was like, 3.
I apply that in my life every single day, you know? Just like... I just deal with so many things every day that mm-hmm. are out of my control. And I am at the core of me, I'm a very controlling person, and I've had to work through a lot of that. You know, like turning it over and believing that like there's something out there that is going to take care of me. Like I have to do that every day.
Mm-hmm. So, okay.
And that hasn't been easy. For me.
So the way that you are interpreting that is that like a higher power?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And I keep that like super simple. It's definitely not like what I was raised with. There's no image in my mind when I think about it. It's just like this thing that's out there. And like I really have this like belief in me that like no matter what happens, no matter what I go through, everything's gonna be okay. Uh-huh. Which is not the belief system I had when I was using. I was a very negative person. Everything was negative. Everything was I can't or it won't happen or you know, always negative. So now that I have like this belief in this higher power, like really no matter what I go through, I'm always like everything's gonna be okay. I might sit and cry for a while, but it's gonna be okay.
I do that all the time.
We know.
Yep.
No, I haven't cried in weeks.
Are you sure?
Positive. I cried in California.
I know you cried in California. There's no fucking way you didn't cry in California.
All the time.
Just fucking waterfalls.
A like, butterfly.
TLC song just like coming out of your fucking eyes.
Thank you.
Sorry. Sorry for that.
I'm not.
No, three's great. Mm-hmm. I can't really.
3 is good.
I'm just very happy to be like... over the hump of 4.
And then you're down on to 6.
And actually 6 is the one I've been the most excited for.
Yeah?
Yes. There's a lot of work I want to do on myself. And with having almost 8 years clean, like I am ready to dig in and do that work.
Yeah.
It's not scary at this point. Because at this point, I've identified a lot of shit already.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
It's just writing it.
Yeah.
So yeah, this will be the last question.
Final question.
Are you the mom you fantasized about as a kid?
Oh, wow.
I think the mom that I fantasized about as a kid, the bar was so high. Mm-hmm. Like, it's like this...
unattainable dream.
It is completely unattainable. And sometimes I'll get caught up in like, I need to be that. Mm. But it doesn't exist.
Yeah.
And so when I get like that, I start to get like depressed, you know, and but then I have to realize like nobody's perfect. I really sometimes expect perfection out of myself, but it doesn't exist. So I think at this stage, like I'm still constantly always working on being just the best mom that I can be. I've like lowered my bar so I don't have to beat myself up all the time. Mm-hmm. I have realistic expectations. Sometimes I fall short of those.
Yeah.
But really, I go to bed and I tell myself, you know what? I was kind of shitty today. I was kind of snappy. You know, I wasn't very consistent today or whatever it was. But I go to bed. I'm like, you know what? I can do better tomorrow as long as I don't use.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And that's just like kind of how I live my life every day. every day I can get better.
Yeah.
And I've really, like, just recently, I've kind of thrown myself into even more of a mom role. Mm-hmm. That I've been very scared and, like, kind of, like, held myself back because I'm like, do I really want to be that soccer mom that's running around doing all these things? And for a while, I'm like, no, I don't want to do that. But you know what? It's what's best for my kids. And I do want to do that because I do want what's best for them.
Yeah.
So that's where the balance has, like, I've had to rebalance my life recently. Mm-hmm. And had to, like, change my meetings that I go to and how many meetings I go to and just make it all work. Mm-hmm. So it's a delicate balance, but it works.
Well, fantastic.
That's great.
Like, that was that was an amazing last question and an even better answer. Like, I did not see that coming at all. I was like, oh, this is either going to be good or really terrible.
Share that shit.
Honestly, through her last answer, I almost cried. I felt it. I was
really?
Like,
oh, did you start to tear up a little bit?
It did. The throat got a little tight. Anyway.
So, like, the notebook for you at the very end?
That's Brad's. I'm not a notebook guy.
Is that Brad?
Yeah.
No. Really?
I'm an I Am Sam guy.
There's, like, terrible CGI, like, birds at the end don't just totally throw off the whole fucking movie?
No. I Am Sam is what makes me cry every time.
Finding Neverland?
Never seen it.
It's very sad.
You would cry.
Thank you.
You would cry.
All right. Well, we digress. We would like to thank our guest, Kim, for coming and joining with us. Cue the clap track.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Fantastic. Yay! Thank you. Thank you. All right. Here at Podcast Recovery, we are aiming to expand the scope of support for recovering addicts. Accessibility and convenience of helpful services is paramount to combating addiction. We work to bring the message of recovery to every addict, wherever and whenever it is needed. We believe that a powerful voice of recovery should be obtainable, practical, and at the touch of a button. Every addict deserves to hear a message of hope, and Podcast Recovery is here to provide it, along with a squeaky dog toy.
Yep, that will soon be over.
Will soon be over when their new studio space and house space is all ready to go. Yep. Well, follow us on Twitter, follow us on Facebook, subscribe, check us out on your apps, podcastrecovery.com.
Sure.
Rate, subscribe, invite your friends. Shit.
Yeah.
We appreciate all our listeners out there. Kim, do you have any last words for everybody out there?
No, I don't know. I don't know what to say.
All right.
Yeah.
That's perfectly fine. All right. Thanks for joining us this week. Tune in next week. Thanks for all your support.
Cool.
Stay safe. Stay clean.